Two dented lift doors were embedded in a wall of pebblecrete. Between them, the up button looked slightly traumatized, like a punching bag. It was hard to believe that the University of New South Wales had just installed a state-of-the-art, web-based management system to run its elevators. Cadell was convinced that they had to be at least 30 years old. "Right," he said, eyeing an indicator panel. "We'll wait till they're empty before we give it a go." Ping. The words had barely left his mouth when one set of double doors slid open, revealing a lank-haired student in a Metallica t-shirt who blinked in sheer astonishment as he surveyed the line of people confronting him. Then he ducked his head, adjusted his backpack, and shuffled off toward the nearest lecture theater. "He must be in my course," Cadell decided, cursing himself for being so slow off the mark. Even after 3 weeks of seminars, he still didn't recognize many of his fellow students. "Do you know who that was?" he asked, in the faint hope that Hamish, at least, might be able to help. But Hamish simply shrugged. He regarded introductory programming as an insult to someone who could boast a genuine police record, and had roundly dismissed many of the other teenage hackers with whom he was forced to associate as a pathetic bunch of script kiddies. Cadell couldn't help thinking that Hamish had an attitude problem. Though the two of them were in exactly the same boat, Cadell wasn't perpetually bitching about its shape or its color. Like Hamish, he had been forced to attend university. The demanding nature of his computer engineering coursework was supposed to keep him so busy that he wouldn't be tempted to engage in any illegal hacking operations. Unlike Hamish, however, Cadell had been quite happy to enroll. He had always wanted to attend a proper university with legitimate teachers, and if that meant relearning all his painfully acquired programming skills, well, he was prepared to make the sacrifice. Hamish wasn't. He'd left high school a year before, at the age of 16, to pursue his own, very specialized interests. Only the combined urgings of his parents, his lawyer, his psychiatrist, and the juvenile justice system could have pushed him back into a highly structured academic environment.
"It's not like there's anything they can actually teach us in a place like this," he'd said to Cadell on one occasion. "We're in a totally different league. We've been out in the real world. We fought real battles, and you can't do that without breaking a few rules. We're cyber warriors, not schoolboys."
It had been hard to keep a straight face, because Cadell couldn't imagine a more unlikely pair of warriors. Hamish looked like an archetypal computer geek, with his glasses and his braces and his bleached, knobbly frame, while Cadell had no illusions about his own appearance, which was unthreatening, to say the least. Angelic blue eyes and a halo of chestnut curls had rescued Cadell from more sticky situations than he cared to admit. And despite the rapid approach of his 16th birthday, he was still unusually small for his age.
"Mind you," he thought, glancing at the three people lined up next to him, "none of us are exactly unobtrusive."
It wasn't surprising that the lank-haired fellow in the elevator had blinked at the sight of them. Though Hamish belonged to a physical type that was quite common in most computer engineering classes, he wore a wholly unconvincing tough-guy outfit, biker's boots, ripped jeans, studded belt. Beside him, Cadell looked like a cherub from a church ceiling. Then there was Judith, massive and middle-aged, with long, frizzy gray hair, fluorescent pink glasses, a shoulder bag made of recycled tea towels, and layers of tie-dyed hemp flapping around her ankles. As for Sonia, she was the most conspicuous of them all. Her cerebral palsy meant that she was racked by continual, eye-catching muscular spasms. What's more, her wheelchair was an imposing piece of technology that tended to dominate whatever space it occupied, thanks to the huge amount of equipment attached to it. Not that any of this equipment was as big or as clumsy as her old Dynavox machine. Once upon a time, Sonia had been forced to spell out her remarks on a keyboard, which had then transmitted them as spoken language. For someone with unreliable motor skills, it had been a slow, laborious, tiring process. Now, thanks to Judith Bashford, Sonia was hooked up to a revolutionary speech synthesizer. From one of her mysterious offshore bank accounts, Judith had extracted enough money to pay for the very latest kind of system.
"If Sonia's going to be studying at university," Judith had declared, "then she'll need all the help she can get.